Hello, and welcome to the Resilient Life Podcast. Resilient Life is part of peakprosperity.com. It's where we focus on practical and actionable knowledge for building a better future. I'm your host, Adam Taggart. In the developed world, we waste a lot of food. In America alone, it's estimated that up to 40% of the post-harvest food supply is discarded, according to the Journal of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. That represents more than 1,200 calories per day for every man, woman, and child in the U.S., just thrown into the trash. Yet at the same time, we have food access issues and nutritional deficits that result in wide-scale health problems and hunger nationwide. Despite having more than enough nutritional calories to go around, our food system is a mess, and it doesn't have to be that way. Today, we're talking with Nick Papadopoulos, founder of Crop Mobster, an innovative company focused on helping communities dramatically improve the potential of their local food sheds. Crop Mobster provides a platform that any community can build on to connect local producers with local consumers in ways that boost economic development, reduce wastage of food and other resources, and assist local hunger relievers. Crop Mobster's model has received impressive praise. In 2014, it received honors from the United States Congress, the Red Cross, and the UN. And its efforts have been featured in major media outlets like Time Magazine, NPR, PBS, China TV, just to name a few. We'll talk with Nick about the Crop Mobster platform, how the model works, and how a community like yours can learn how to tap into it. Nick, thanks so much for being our guest today.
Thank you, Adam, and thank you to your listeners at Peak Prosperity. It's an honor to be on the show with you.
Oh, thanks. It's an honor to have you. Well, to get started, can you provide a little bit of background on Crop Mobster? How did it get started, and what key benefits and services does it provide?
Yeah, sure thing, Adam. You know, Crop Mobster gets started like a lot of my ideas have in the past. I was working on my family's farm in 2013, Sonoma County, 50-acre vegetable farm, and we had been making a lot of progress growing our business. You know, we developed a CSA program, working to sell to local grocers and really trying to be a part of the local food movement. And the origins of Crop Mobster, I think, started when I was standing in the vegetable cooler of our farm on a Sunday night. And guess what I saw? About 7 or 8 boxes of premium, beautiful organic produce that had gone unsold and that would have been fed to the chickens. And that just drove me insane in that moment. And I think just something triggered in my mind and my heart to say, this is a problem for our farm. We've invested our money, our love, our effort in growing this beautiful, nutritious produce. Problem for our community. There's a lot of folks who, whether they're foodies looking for the best food in the area or local hunger relievers looking for donations, there's a lot of people who need that food. And I just decided to take action. And so Crop Mobster started when we started fiddling around with email and social media to do instant alerts anytime we had extra food to sell or to donate. So the first time around, we decided to post a deal, say, hey, folks, we'll give you a great deal on this food. It needs to move quick, let's say by tomorrow morning, so within 12 hours, and we'll cut you a deal. It'll be a win for our farm. We'll recover some costs. It'll be a win for you. You'll get a great deal on some premium food. And I think for our community, maybe be an example of getting something done that's positive. And next morning, a mom rolls up in her minivan, and keep in mind, I was just doing experiments on Facebook. She loads up the food, pays us a little bit, definitely not full price, but we made a good wage for that. And then, you know, we heard by the end of the day, she had delivered it to about 20 neighbors in her subdivision in our local community there. The next weekend, the same thing happened, except we decided, you know, the food had come back from farmers market unsold, and we decided to make an alert, a donation to hunger relievers. Oftentimes it takes a lot of time to find the right match for your food donation. I just want to see if we can make it happen quicker and more effectively. And same thing happened. And about 2 weeks in, got good feedback that what we were doing was inspiring and having a little bit of impact. And it was clear that there was something there. And so me and my buddy Gary decided to jump in, and we jerry-rigged an initial platform in the barn out at our farm. And we launched Crop Mobster to hopefully initially have an impact on food waste, food insecurity, things like that.
Wow. And that was just in 2013 when you had that initial epiphany in the vegetable cooler at night. So 4 years later, you know, do you have any sort of estimates of the scale at which Crop Mobster has helped, you know, connect those who want this type of surplus food with those who have it?
Yeah, so in terms of the scale, there's our model and how we've grown, but there's also the important aspect of, I think, inspiring others to take action. We weren't really aware of the food waste crisis in the U.S. or the world when we launched in 2013, but we realized that was about the same time that a lot of awareness was growing about this issue. We expanded from our farm to our local community, Sonoma County in the San Francisco Bay Area. Then we expanded to the 8 San Francisco Bay Area regions within the first year. And then we sort of plateaued there. We really were interested in seeing what works, seeing how we could improve the model, seeing how we might be able to grow and scale. And then communities started reaching out, like leaders in Sacramento County and the greater Sacramento region in California, and saying, hey, can we hire you to come on board to build a community exchange, a local food network for our community? So I think the scale of impact to your question, with numbers, we've had millions of pounds of food find a home, either through sales, donation, trades, or freebies. We've been able to engage a good number of people in those regions to really get involved in their food system and to get involved in what folks call the sharing economy. Millions of dollars has been generated. Again, when we talk about food insecurity, we can't forget that there's farmer and economic security and insecurity that hunger relievers face when looking to raise funds or things like that. So we've been able to generate quite a bit of money in these exchanges to really help these small businesses and organizations survive and thrive. So in terms of pounds of food and nutritional servings, we've had a lot of impact. We can't see all of it because we don't take control of the full transaction. Again, with money, a good amount of impact. But I think the biggest impact has been inspiration of the thousands of people that have gotten involved either through our model or through our story getting out there. There's a lot of action now in terms of different models emerging that are dead set on tackling the food waste problem, really thinking about how to drive improvements in our local food system and food sheds. So I think our inspiration of even other organizations and examples around the world has been tremendous too. And that's a little bit harder to measure. So I hope that helps answer your question.
No, it does. And it's certainly impressive how much you've been able to do in really just 4 short years. It's a pretty big expansion you've had in that small period of time from, you know, starting with a stack of a couple boxes in your vegetable freezer. There's so much in there that I want to unpack. So if you don't mind, let's walk through a little bit of what you just said there.
Let's do it.
So, you know, first, let me just deconstruct to make sure I've got the model right. Because it does sound like you started this as a way to kind of get surplus food in the hands of consumers before the surplus food went bad. But as I understand it from having poked around a crop mobster a little bit, you do more than that these days. And so the platform is expanding. And I see you sort of having 2 main constituents here. One is local producers. And first, you focus on the smaller producer, right? You're not as concerned about really big agriculture producers like big ag type companies. Is that correct?
Yeah, it tends to be small to medium sized businesses, nonprofits, farms that get involved in what we're doing. We're open though. So anyone who feels the need to engage with us and hopefully have some of their problems solved or to really engage in this community we've got going, anyone's welcome to participate. We have had large volumes and large farms, businesses involved. But the focus is, you know, individual level, garden level, small farm and small business level, and the community nonprofits that do God's work in communities. So yeah, hopefully that helps clarify things a little.
No, that's great. And of course, I love that, my bias of you know, local resilience, certainly local food producing resilience is really important. And so providing a way, you know, any resources that help the smaller providers hang in there and you know, be able to make an economic living at this, I think is really useful. So anyways, you've got 2 main constituents. You've got those that are producing the food and those who want to get their hands on it. And it looks like the benefits are for those local producers. Crop Mobster offers economic development, so you're actually helping them, you know, grow you know, be more profitable at their businesses. Clearly, it focuses on helping preventing food waste. And I also believe there's additional resources that you help serve as an exchange for. And then third, you mentioned your support of hunger relievers. So am I getting that correct? Are those kind of the three big ways that we're helping local producers in these communities?
Yeah, you're really honing in there, Adam, and I think definitely enough to chew on here for this call. Let me just back up and say we started with a specific focus on this food waste challenge and how to find a home for it, maximize the value of that opportunity that's about to be lost. So helping farmers sell, helping hunger relievers receive quicker, easier, higher quality donations, and then helping make use of all the resources that went into that food. So our start was really around this idea of the relationships in a community that could prevent, recover, find a home for food at risk of going to waste, and create something valuable out of it, either a sale, donation, et cetera. But then as we learned, we saw that folks were using us for a lot of different reasons. In a food system, if you think about it as kind of a bicycle wheel or a web, and each spoke as a relationship, we started out focusing on the different transactions that could help prevent food waste. And then it's evolved to the point where multiple relationships and multiple types of needs are being addressed. We've got sales at full price, donations, trades, bartering, people posting that they have jobs to offer in the local region, people posting that they're looking for work or they have a service to provide, crowdfunding. A lot of folks start their small businesses trying to raise money and do crowdfunding, you know, like a Kickstarter, an Indiegogo or something. But guess what? No crowd. So they'll post their crowdfunding on our site, and hopefully we'll help them, give them a little nudge to success. And so what we've teased out are a host of different relationships that happen in every community that's required for a resilient, healthy food system. And we've sort of evolved to where we can support any one of those types of exchanges where people can post an alert saying, here's what I have or here's what I need. And then the idea, Adam, is to rally community, not just around the transaction, around the commodity, but hopefully inspire folks enough to get involved, share those alerts, and deliver an impact for whoever it is has had the guts to make a post on the platform, and hopefully something good turns out. I mean, at the end of the day, it's really about helping yourself, and that's what a lot of platforms offer. But how can we develop something that really focuses on helping people and their individual needs? And I think this gets to the point of your show in part, resilience. But how can we also not only help ourselves, but help others? And so I think at the end of the day, to sum it up, it's really like a Craigslist meets Community Grange. And then the other piece we need to talk about is how we moderate or run it. And we really try to equip communities to train and hire local leaders to run these exchanges that they control, to empower their community to really strengthen and improve the dynamics in their food system. Well, a little bit of a mouthful there.
No, but you actually took a few words right out of my mouth, which is the comparison to Craigslist. You guys really, that was one of the things that really caught my eye about Crop Mobster as I began to spend more time on the site there, is that it really seems like you're providing that same function that Craigslist provides for, you know, kind of the average resident of an area. You're doing that, but you're doing that with the filter of local food production on top of it. And it's really inspiring to see the huge variety of things that people are using you for. So while you sort of started with a single focus on food waste, it's very clear that you've evolved into something much more burgeoning than that. And I think that's because the community really needed this type of digital exchange. I mean, you sort of referenced the Grange model. That's sort of what I sort of see you guys are. Is you're sort of the new, you know, digital version of the Grange, which is wonderful. So let's build on that, because you talked about you initially started in Sonoma County here in the Bay Area, and then you've now had other communities reach out to you to have you come and you know, basically replicate the model in their area. And as I understand it, you know, that's what Crop Mobster was built to be. It was built to be a platform that could be deployed in really kind of any community that wanted to use it. So you mentioned Sacramento, and kind of the way I'm thinking of you guys, you know, I'm sort of thinking of you like this sort of Craigslist digital Grange, but I'm also sort of thinking of you as like a local food system in a box, that you can just, you know, partner with somebody in a local community and they can take your platform and voila, all of a sudden they've got everything they need to be able to connect all the different producers and consumers in an area in a way that perhaps they weren't connected before. Is that an accurate way to think of you guys?
Yeah, I mean, everyone has a different perspective, and one of the challenges and opportunities is always just to get on the same page in terms of lingo. But let's start with Craigslist in a box or local food system in a box, and let's open the lid and see what's inside. So,
okay, let's do it.
So when we first started, of course, like a lot of innovations, we're thinking, okay, technology is going to be the holy grail that solves the problem here. But guess what? It's not. You need human beings involved, and the offline is as important as the online. So when a bold leader of a community, like a board of supervisor or a chancellor at a university or a sponsoring business gets involved with us, for sure we develop and replicate an exchange for their local region. It could be a county or a series of counties or some other demographic. Maybe it's the 100-mile radius or food shed around their municipality. So replicating the technology is one piece of it. But what we learned very early on is that you can't just chuck technology at a problem and expect to solve it or expect to do something that's lasting and sustainable. So the second big piece of it we realized is this idea that wouldn't it be great if we could identify promising, emerging food system leaders that know their community better than we ever will and equip them with the mindset, the skills, and the trainings to partner with the technology, do community outreach, work with stakeholders, Farm Bureau, food banks, slow food chapters, you know, beekeeping clubs, get these folks rallied together around the tool and to drive impact that way. So the technology is one piece. The most important piece, I think, that goes along with it is identifying and training on an ongoing basis strong local leaders. And we love working with the youngsters because they're our future, right? To then take hold of the exchange in their own community and with a bucket full of passion and what we call infectious enthusiasm, get out in the fields, get out in the streets at the farmers markets and engage with their community to use these tools, to do trainings, to do coaching. And so the human side is very important to this. It's also a big challenge in terms of adopting. You got to make sure this gets out into the community, that people in a simple way learn how to use it. They see the benefits, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think that the clearest example I can share with you is a new one that's actually launching right now. Merced County in California, rural community. The University of Merced has recently been built in that community in the Central Valley of California. High rates of food insecurity, the need to bring the community together. A lot of students looking for tangible ways to get involved in solving the world's problems. And farmers, hunger relievers, and a lot of others who need help. And so the chancellors and the trustees at University of Merced found out about us, a guy by the name of Charles Neese, who's the vice chancellor of student affairs. And he said, hey, could we do Crop Mobster Merced for our community? And could we, by chance, have you teach our students and youth how to run it for our community, drive the impact today, in the hopes that we might be able to equip and grow a few leaders of tomorrow. So it's really exciting to evolve to the point where we're supporting the commodity transaction in a whole food system and all hosts of relationships. We've learned the need to train local leaders to drive their own impact. And then now we were so excited to work and to train and coach young leaders in a community to drive the exchange, to drive the impact, and to grow, hopefully, even more into the leaders of tomorrow. So we're really excited about that project because we feel like it blends the need, just like in permaculture or in resilient food systems, the need to really layer impact so we can find a home for food waste, save those natural resources, raise money and sales for farmers. But at the same time, as we, you know, deliver that impact, the young leaders are learning. They're learning how to conduct community meetings. They're learning how to do real-time coaching of folks with a need or not sure how to make a post. So it's just really excited to combine those into an impact model that we can then take to leaders of a community and say, hey, let's turn this on. Let's make some magic happen in your community, and let's try to bring folks together across our different buckets, farmers, hunger relievers, government agencies in a new way that drives the impact, but also brings us together around this ethic of, you know, let's get together to help our individual interests out, but also let's help each other out. And that's what's great about technology. You know, it's this new gear we've got to really tap into and revitalize some really old school ethics that are in our communities and we want to raise even further.
There's so much about what you're doing that's sort of right in the bullseye of our mission here at Peak Prosperity. I just love it. And I'm going to ask a leading question here, which is, As I understand it, again, this is a platform that was built to be scalable and to be deployed in more and more communities. Are you actively looking for more communities to, you know, reach out who might be interested in using this platform?
Oh, leading question. Great, great one, Adam. And the answer is definitely yes. This is our passion. We've spent 4 years, our small team, working on honing this model. We are always open to talking new leaders in a community who want to bring this on board. Right now, we're in a state of Mexico, experiencing a tremendous amount of food insecurity. International Community Foundation, which is based in San Diego but serving the states of Baja, reached out to us and said, hey, let's explore launching an exchange for a state in Mexico. So we're working on that. We'd like to grow to the state of California. We're open to talking to anyone in the world that sees the need to solve these problems holistically, that sees the need to engage their local leaders to doing something new and impactful. And aside from those leaders that would bring us in, or the funders or the social investors, one of our favorite things to do in the world is listen and meet folks. I get a call or an email almost every day now from people around the world saying, can you apply this to our community? And I wish I could meet the needs of those folks right away and turn on their exchange. We're not quite there yet. It involves getting to the leaders of those communities and inspiring them to bring us in. But I'd say on the path to scalability, we're in the middle. We can turn on an exchange very rapidly, but the key is to do the organizational and community development that puts together the other behaviors and practices to allow it to really be successful, or else it can just sit out there as a site. And guess what? No one's visiting, no one's signing up, and no one's using it to do important things. So we're right in the middle, where we have a model where we can bring the technology in, the training, the onboarding, the launch, all the post-launch coaching. And we're just excited as heck to hopefully, with your help and others, connect with leaders in communities, regions, counties, states, and say, hey, what will it take to do this in our region? We're ready to talk.
All right. Well, I'm going to make the assumption that of the thousands of people that are listening to this, you know, knowing the Peak Prosperity audience as I do, there's going to be a lot of people that are inspired by this model and want it brought to their communities. And some of those people are probably going to be some of the community leaders you're talking about. So if someone is inspired here and they want to reach out to you, what would be the best way to do that? And then maybe just quickly walk through, what are some of the first steps in activating the platform? I mean, you mentioned getting local leaders involved and whatnot, but is there a progression here that folks you know, should have an expectation in their head that they need to go through?
Sure thing. My contact information is nick@cropmobster.com. info@cropmobster.com always works. Our website is cropmobster.com. We're always open to folks reaching out. We'll talk to anyone. The ideal partner is a bold community leader at a government agency, a university, someone who has a broad view of many pieces of needs in their community, from economic, environmental, social. Bold leaders reach out to us, and the first step is really to take time to get to know each other and to listen to the community's particular needs. For instance, sometimes rural communities are wondering, hey, a lot of new models benefit urban areas but not rural. How can you help us? So we spend a lot of time talking about issues like that. What do you do if there's a rural area with not a lot of internet connectivity? Does Crop Mobster still work? And the answer is yes. So we have a solution to that that's not quite internet-based, but you get the point. We spend a lot of time in discovery and listening and really getting a sense of whether there's a win-win partnership in the works. The other piece is that there's different ways to fund this. Could be a grant, could be a private donor, a social impact investor. We're even open to that, although really careful about where we take our investment from. But the idea is we can start up an exchange and equip the community pretty rapidly in a few months to get rolling. And it starts by customizing the exchange from a technological standpoint. It also starts by listening to the community. So right now in Baja, Mexico, where we're exploring, you know, a lot of questions about whether or not this is a fit. And our real response and point is, hey, let's listen to the community and let's ask the community. So sometimes we even do community surveys up front to get a sense of community readiness and whether or not there is a need, because we shouldn't always assume there is. And so up front, being able to establish the technology customized to a region's geography, county, zip codes, things like that. And then being able to hire and locate young leaders and others who can drive this exchange and take our training. So it takes time to identify the right people to run this. That's a big part of it. We spend time customizing that region's look and feel and pictures, graphics, things like that. We spend a lot of time in training, running scenarios, getting alerts ready to post. And then we work on the PR media side to engage stakeholders and others to really adopt this, because this isn't for us. This isn't for just the folks that bring us in. This is for the whole community. So I'd say the most important piece is to spend a few months up front reaching out to different groups, organizations, individuals to listen, to share how it works and how we hope it to work and what the desired impact should be, and to make sure folks feel like they're part of it, part of the mission, involved, and they know the nuts and bolts of how it works. So that's what we've been doing in the Merced County community for the last 4 months, is really preparing the community, listening to the community to adopt this. And once it's ready to go, all systems are go, both the technology, but the cultural and organizational and the community outreach aspects. We let it rip and we get out there. We encourage folks to make posts. We go the extra mile, whether or not the post gets out there on email or social media and finds a result. We get on the phones, our moderators call people, text people. We make sure to go to the extra mile to make sure folks get an impact right away. That, you know, builds momentum that is crucial in the early days to getting these off the ground and running. Because a lot of technologies or a lot of models, the most crucial aspect, you're almost, you know, developing a new organization here. The most crucial aspect is getting that early adoption, earning the trust of a community, getting folks tangible results. You know, today, I'll just switch gears a little bit. I'm looking at Crop Mobster SF Bay, and, you know, there's a guy with two hens that need to find a home. Time to move. So the hens need a new home. And it thrills us nothing like nothing else to, as moderators, be able to, you know, redo the outreach, do what we call food system DJing, and make sure the word gets out. So within minutes or hours, those hens, egg laying, have found a new home. Strawberries at a farm called Live Oak. The strawberries are just ripening. They've got an acre full, not quite fully sold. Want to get them a good price. So we're out there doing networking and making sure they get results. So I think, you know, after 4 years of doing this, we've developed a success model that isn't only technologically based. It's about making sure that there's an interest in the community and adoption of the platform from a user standpoint, you know, people interested in taking part, making sure folks on the supply side, whether it's an event, a job, an amount of food, are interested in participating and they get results. And then a bunch of other factors that, you know, are critical to being able to launch this. And so it's pretty long-winded, but basically we have a model that we can go into a community with success factors and our technology to give the exchange, the local food network, the best possible chances for long-term success.
Yeah, and that's what I think is so important here, and kind of why I refer to you guys as like a local food system in a box, is, you know, it's not just the code of the platform. It's all the expertise that you guys bring in terms of who are the key people in the community to have to, you know, line up their support in advance. And then, you know, how do you mobilize the community itself? Because, you know, you and I have known lots and lots of other ventures in the local food industry that have died, not because the product wasn't a good product, but just because the community wasn't prepped for it, right? And what you guys are doing are taking a holistic approach. And, you know, the average person who's, you know, trying to fight the good fight in their community oftentimes, you know, doesn't have a lot of the seasoned experience that you have in terms of the critical key success factors and best practices. So I love that when we take the lid off your box in a new community, whoever's doing that is benefiting from all the experience you've had of launching this in previous communities before. And so it sounded to me from how you were sort of detailing it that I'm sure it's different from community to community, but it sort of sounds like, you know, you can be, you know, up and running in about 6 months, right? From someone reaching out to you to finding the key people to get on board to customizing the platform and, you know, getting the PR and stuff all cooked up. Roughly 6 months-ish sort of sounds like what you were talking about. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yeah, 3 to 6 months. And it all depends on the leadership readiness when we come into a community. But yeah, 3 to 6 months is about how much time it takes.
Okay. Which is not that long. I mean, it's pretty quick, which is great.
Exactly. And what we found is And this is the same as our philosophy for our overall social venture and businesses. No need to rush. You're not going to solve these problems overnight. The challenges and opportunities are always going to be there. So if we're not ready to launch and those success factors aren't in place and we don't have the pieces ready to roll, it's okay to take a few more days and weeks. So we really just try to be thoughtful about how we do this work and partner with communities. Because the goal isn't to have a solution that is there for 6 months or a year or 2 years or 5 years. We're really interested, Adam, in how to drive impact in the short term, but how to provide communities with their own exchange, locally controlled, that is lasting for many years and decades. Think NASDAQ. Think platforms like Craigslist. Yeah. Think of these exchanges and these community organizations like The Grange who've lasted decades. And so there's a lot of questions in that one in terms of how to go about it. But our vision is to do whatever it takes, no matter how slow we go at times, to really be thoughtful. And when we earn the trust of a community and we're invited and funded to come in and do our work, we don't really want to leave. We want to keep that trust. The last thing that we want to do, we've seen this a lot over the couple last few years, is tens of $20 million of dollars raised for startup ventures focused purely on the rapid growth. Go into a large region where farmers are in need, start driving a lot of sales, and then guess what? They're not hitting the growth targets. And so maybe in midsummer, they crash and they end and they leave those customers hanging and those farmers hanging. And so our vision, and it's a lofty aspiration, in many ways, this is a day and a week and a month and a time at Crop Mobster, is once we earn the trust and respect of a community, we want to do our darndest and we would do whatever it takes to make sure that all that we've invested in and built creates something that is lasting for a community, because that at root is what resilience is all about, right? But it's a hard row to hoe, I got to tell you. So with that, I'll just stop and see what other questions have bubbled up for you.
Okay. Well, just beginning to sort of wrap up here, I want to let folks know how I first found out about you. You know Adam Parks, who I actually interviewed a couple of weeks ago here on Peak Prosperity. We did a great podcast about sustainably raised meats. And Adam and I were running a CSA, a meat CSA in Petaluma that you're probably familiar with, Nick. And we took it over from its previous owner, and their inventory management hadn't been spectacular. And, you know, as tends to happen in the ranching business, or the meat CSA business, you get a lot of demand for the popular cuts and then less demand for other parts of the animal. And so when we opened the freezers there for the first time, we had a huge amount of bones and fat. And we really needed to clean these freezers out to make room for higher margin product for us. And we were trying to figure out, you know, what the heck are we going to do with this? And we Adam knew about Crop Mobster, and we put this stuff on Crop Mobster, and we had to beat people off with a stick. I mean, it was crazy how effective this was. I mean, I think literally within like an hour of putting on a Crop Mobster, we were almost completely depleted. And I think we'd had almost a dozen people find us within 60 minutes. So it's you know, really caught my attention as something that is filling a clear need. And again, that was just on the sort of excess surplus supply dimension. Anyways, I've seen your product in action, and it really impressed me. But of course, as we've talked about in the podcast here, there's so much more that it brings. And, talking to people across the country here, whether they're urban or suburban or rural, again, you and I have spent time in Sonoma County, which has a real surplus of small producers, and we're very lucky that way. Most other local areas don't have those benefits, and for them to be able to tap more of what we have here by leveraging a platform like yours really excites me. So anyways, I think you did a really good job of going where I was going to go, talking about what does success look like to you, where it's really, you know, your model duplicated across many, many communities that want to bring it in, make it their own, and build that local community resilience. You know, here at Peak Prosperity, we're all about driving action at the local level, individual level, and hopefully collections of local resilient individuals then build up to a higher layer where they're creating resilient local communities. And solutions like yours, I think, are exactly the type of things that they're going to help us do that. So in beginning to wrap up here, you had mentioned, I think before we actually started talking here, but that Crop Mobster, which, by the way, there's absolutely no business relationship between Peak Prosperity and Crop Mobster. It's just a innovative model that we find very interesting and inspiring and worth consideration. So we've got no business relationship, but you've mentioned to me, Nick, that you guys might be undertaking a new round of funding soon. And so I take it that if anybody who's listening who may be inspired by the mission of your company, but may also be interested in learning more about that that fundraising activity, A, are you indeed going to be raising funds soon? And B, the contact information that you gave out earlier, is that the same contact information that somebody who might be interested in learning more about potentially becoming an investor in Crop Mobster, is that the right contact information that they should reach out to?
Yeah, right contact information, nick@cropmobster.com. And I'd say before, of course, raising capital, raising money is important to us, but most important to us is raising relationships. And so we've learned to really take our time to talk with interested funders, to make sure there's a fit in terms of value, to make sure there's a fit not just financially, but in terms of the opportunity to tap into new skills and abilities of the funders that are coming to the table. Could be a foundation interested in a donation through one of our nonprofit partners to start a local exchange. Could be an impact investor looking to do something remarkable with the hopes of a return down the road. So we have a lot of ways to engage. I would just encourage folks who this interview has triggered something within to reach out to us and start a dialogue. Nothing's going to happen overnight. We found the best financial and investment relationships happen through dialogue and taking time to get to know each other. And so, yes, whether it's a philanthropist wanting to get involved or an impact investor or everyday person interested in putting in some time or effort or sweat equity, we're open to any and all of it, because this is sort of like a community project where folks are doing this together. It hasn't just been because of me and my idea. There's just been a tribe of folks who've gotten together from foundations, small local investors and others to really make this happen. So, and also communities who have maybe a food initiative or some other fund that is focused on the local food movement, developing food hubs, supporting farmers. We have contracts in place to do work for communities. So there's just a lot of routes folks can follow. And finally, we like to have fun. We have a store where we sell fun and quirky food pun shirts. So if you'd like to make a dill and have that on a shirt, give us a ring. We sell those shirts. Repairing the system with a pair. We've got one called Flower to the People. Check out our online store and you'll have a good time just maybe wearing a new piece of merch, and that'll help a little bit along the way as well. So those are the ways folks can get involved, and there's probably others I'm not thinking of, but we're just waiting to build more resilient relationships with people who really want to get involved with us for the long term.
Well, great. So I will post the contact info that you provided here along with the write-up of this podcast. So anybody that wants to get in touch with Nick or learn more about Crop Mobster can. Nick, I will warn you, I think you will get a few folks reaching out, maybe more than a few. And, you know, even though our audience kind of skews middle age, we do have a number of bright, shiny millennials and Generation Zs that listen as well. And it sounds like the door there as well is open to anybody, but particularly that younger generation that's looking for how they can make a difference in both helping their local communities as well as just the future of the planet. Correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Senior citizens, our elders, youth, anyone who sees opportunity to do something remarkable in their community, whether it's with money, with time, with new ideas, reach out to us. Let's start a dialogue and see what happens. But we know for one thing that, you know, one transaction, one alert, one share at a time, we've seen tremendous impact happen. We're ready to go, and we're ready to get rolling with new communities. Thank you so much.
Great. Well, Nick, thank you so much. And really, thank you for everything that Crop Mobster is out there doing in the world. Wish you guys the best of luck. Look forward to having you on again at some point in the future to update us on all the progress you've made since this podcast. Can tell you guys are going to be up to great things. And thanks again for making yourself so available to anybody who reaches out to you, because like I said, I think your phone's going to start ringing here.
Oh, thank you, buddy. We appreciate this so much. Take care. And thank you to your community of Peak Prosperity listeners.
All right. Well, good luck, Nick.
Okay, bye-bye.